Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Rory Swenson from the Park United Methodist Church in Brainerd from Senator Coring's district.
Gracious and Holy One, in the quieting pause of this moment, we open ourselves to the gift of your presence. In the busyness and the preparations of this day, we remember that you are with us and in us, beyond us, and all around us. As we do the work of this day, may we be open to your ever-broadening vision, your ever-deepening love, and the greatness of your wisdom given collectively to us. We pray for a sacred sensitivity to one another. Help us to consider the power of our words and our deeds as we seek the common good that you would have for all of us here in Minnesota and far beyond. This day is a gift, and we give you thanks for the opportunities before us. Amen.
Thank you very much. Thank you. See you. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Lurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. Next order of business is executive and official communications. They're on today's agenda. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports relative to appointments.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports relative to appointments be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are four authors' motions without objection. We will take them as one motion. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. There are three resolutions on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be sent to the Rules Committee. We have a motion to be reported.
Senator Kubli moves that Senate File 141 be withdrawn from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Kubli, did you have the consent of the
Mr. President, I would move that Senate File 141 be withdrawn from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay. And Senator, you've talked to the committee chairs and everybody's in agreement. On the Kubli motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Mike, Any other motions or resolutions? Seeing none, we'll go to the next order of business, which is a calendar for the day. On the calendar today will be House File number 8.
House File 8, a bill for an act relating to taxation, conforming certain income, franchise, and property tax refund provisions for tax year 2006 to the federal teacher expense deduction, etc.
Any discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File number 8 its third reading. Secretary will take the roll.
Thank you.
There's a Senator Stumpf and Senator Parasol have been asked to be excused from today's session. I think there's one left. I don't know. We're waiting for Senator Latz. So. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. Being 65 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill on the calendar is Senate File Number 25. Senator Cohn, Senator.
Senate File 25, a bill for an act relating to state finance requiring the Commissioner of Finance to adjust for projected inflation and forecasting state expenditures.
Any discussion?
Mr. President.
Senator Hamp.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could I ask for a call to Senate, please?
I suppose you can, huh? Yeah. Call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Hamm.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings on the call be dispensed with and the sergeants be directed to bring in absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members. This is a bill that we talked about in the Committee of the Whole the other day. This is the bill that would propose that we reinstate the inflationary adjustment into our budgetary process. And members...
Senator Hamm.
Mr. President, could we have some order?
All right.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just would like to make sure members are aware that I think this is an important vote. This is, one of those votes that helps the public to understand that there are differences between our views on how we want to approach governance and policy. And it's significant. And this vote kind of broke down on party lines the other day. I would hope it doesn't do the same today. I would hope that my friends on the other side of the aisle would join with us and make an effort to bring some fiscal responsibility to our process. Let's remember that inflation, when we talk about inflation, what is responsible for inflation? Inflation is a result of government activity. That's what it is. Prices don't go up automatically in the real world. They're a reflection of market forces. But when you have inflation, what you're doing is you're adding a cost to something when you don't see any other change except an increase in cost. And the argument is that in the normal course of things, that costs will go up, and we ought to just include that into our baseline projection of the budget. And I think that does a disservice to this body and to the public, because what it does is it makes it very difficult for us to ask the harder questions about what are we spending the money on. And are we getting a good result for the monies that we're investing? I think that's a challenge for government in any case, to get efficiency out of what we do. A very difficult process. In fact, I don't think in my 4 years that I've been here that I've seen any effort to say, let's try to do this thing at a lower cost. Let's try to get this result that we hope for at a less cost than we do today. That is typically not the discussion that we have. And when we put into our budget process the assumption that all costs are going to go up 3% or 4% or whatever it is, what we're doing then is making that discussion of looking at the underlying cost drivers much, much more difficult, because the assumption is that's what the true cost is today, that inflated cost. And what is that inflated cost? All prices don't automatically go up by the same amount every year. They just don't. There are some things that will and there are some things that won't. But many of the costs that we deal with in government come about because of decisions that people make. And the other day we talked about in education, for example, that the largest cost in education is a decision that's made by school districts and unions as they bargain and they agree what those costs will be. And to say that that is an inflation-driven cost is not correct. And so I know that many of you, many of us on the Republican side, and I know many of you on the other side of the aisle, during the campaign, we talked a lot about being fiscally responsible and getting good results for the money that we invest. And how do we do that? How do we do that if we don't take the time to look at what are the programs, what are the cost drivers, are we really getting what we expect? And when we build inflation into this factor and assume it, that conversation, I think, gets set aside. It gets set aside. We assume that additional cost is going to be there, and then we talk about what we do next, instead of what are we going to do about the program today and ask the question of whether it's really doing what we expect it to do and what that cost ought to be. And let's also remember that this does not preclude us from talking about inflation. The current structure of the budget hasn't prohibited anybody from talking about inflation. We talk about it all the time. The article that Senator Cohen handed out to us, it talks about how this debate has dominated the discussion of the surplus that we have and whether and in which way we should take it into consideration. And that is a healthy discussion to have. And so, members, I think that we ought to do the right thing. We ought to do the fiscally responsible thing. Let's not assume a cost that isn't real. Inflation is not a real cost. It is a government-driven cost. In business, and those of you who have been in business know this, when you put together a budget, you do not start out and say, we're going to assume the cost to go up by 4%. You come in and you talk about individual cost drivers and say, here are the factors that are going to affect that cost. Some of them could go up, some could go down. But you build your budget from reality.
All right, let's show a little more respect to the people that are talking. And
thank you, Mr. President. I guess now that I'm over in this corner, I ought to talk more like Senator LeClaire.
We're not going that far. No.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, members, let's do the right thing. What we have today does not preclude us from recognizing the effect of inflation, does not preclude us from taking it into consideration. But what it does do is it puts pressure on us to do the thing that's already difficult for legislative bodies to do, which is to look at the cost drivers of the programs that we have in place and asking the more difficult questions, are we really getting the value that we expect, the results that we hope for? And so, members, I urge you to vote no. Vote no on this proposal. Let's do the right thing. Let's continue to try to focus ourselves on getting good results. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Cohn.
Mr. President and members, Senator Hahn raises the concern that I believe we answered with the amendment that was placed on the bill. The forecast process and the budget process are different processes, and I would point members to the editorial in this morning's Star Tribune that I had distributed. That argument, the argument about placing the spending on autopilot, that argument betrays confusion about something that should be crystal clear to state lawmakers. Forecasting and budgeting are different things. Assessing the cost of operating the state patrol, for example, in 2009, if its size and mission do not change, is not the same as sending that sum to the troopers. Forecasting and budgeting are different things. This is an honesty in the process. Members, I think, campaigned during the election year on honesty and openness. That's what this is all about.
Further discussion, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator Cohen. And I think that's a very good point. The editorial says that assessing the cost, for example, of the troopers, if its size and mission do not change, is not the same as sending the money. But that's the point. By putting inflation into the budget, we are assuming that the mission and the size are not going to change. And that, to me, is the crux of this issue. We think we need to do a better job of questioning the mission and the results of various programs that we have in this state. We cannot go on the assumption that we can just do what we're doing today and pay more money for it. We all know about the demographic changes that we're facing in the next decade. We cannot, in any economic sense, afford to just do what we've done in the past. And I think by assuming inflation, we are, in effect, assuming that the mission is sound, the results are there, there has to be really no change in what we're doing today. We just need to fund it at a different level. That, I think, is the problem. We cannot afford to assume that. We need to do a better job of looking at what those underlying drivers are.
Further discussion? Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and members, earlier, a few weeks ago, we had a hearing in my division. We had the Veterans Homes Board come in to talk to us. And they told us some interesting things, Senator Hahn. They told us that the Department of Finance instructed them to assume 3.25% inflation in their budget. Then they told them to also assume that they would not be receiving a 3.25% increase, which left them then with the task of constructing a budget to present that would remove 3.25% from their staffing of their facilities. Now let me just explain to you what that would mean if that's what happens for the Minneapolis Veterans Home. The $4.5 million that we gave them last year to increase their staffing because of their poor performance due to staffing shortages would be eaten up by making that kind of a reduction. I think it is simply foolish for us not to have all of the facts in front of us when we make these decisions. And if we hadn't had that hearing before the governor's budget came out, they wouldn't have been able to tell us that that is what they were being asked to do. I think this bill makes sense. Doesn't mean that it's going to be appropriated, the inflation, but at least it makes sense in terms of understanding that we have an obligation to look at it.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just two quick points. The first would be that if the Star and Tribune editorial board told all members of the Senate to jump off a cliff, I believe that Senator Hahn and I would get up and try and convince you all not to do it. And we would ask you to use your independent judgment before you made the decision. That's what we're asking you to do today. Use your independent judgment. The second point would be that if this were a deflationary economy, would you automatically cut every department across the board by 5%? No, you would not. You would be careful with the money you had, and you would carefully look at each department and decide which ones were providing needed services so that you could maximize the resources that you have. That's all we're saying. You would never do it in a deflationary economy. Why would you do it in an inflationary economy? It's a gimmick, and to be intellectually honest, it is our job to look at these budgets with a discerning eye and maximize the resources that the good residents of the state of Minnesota gave us to work with.
Further discussion on House File 25. Seeing none, the Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President and members. We had a recent discussion regarding this bill when it came through the first time a few days ago. I would like to remind our members of the discussion that we had. We also may want to revisit a discussion we had over a year ago regarding this very same issue, when members of the majority party joined members of the minority party in recognizing that this type of obligatory statutory requirement for our budgets was not necessary as of that time when we made that decision, that a reference to inflation be accepted as a reference to consider when we're conducting our budgeting. That's what we have under existing state law right now. According to state law, we already are forced to consider the impact of inflation. This goes a major step forward, making reference to inflation as a nearly automatic reference to be included in all budgeting. Now, I mentioned a few days ago that we talked about what kind of perfect storm could occur that might create some severe damages to our budgeting process. Senator Ortman raised the question just today, what if we had a deflationary economy where instead of the cost rising, the cost dropped? Do we automatically cut state spending on much needed and priority spending areas in our state? Would nursing homes be cut? Would transportation programs be cut? Would education funds be cut? I doubt it, because we historically have recognized those areas of state spending as priorities, bedrock priorities in the state of Minnesota. Nevertheless, We're going to recognize whatever that inflationary factor is in our budgets according to the very decision we're about to make. Let's take, for example, and we haven't had deflationary economies in a long time in this country, but let's recognize the average inflation that we're dealing with today, 3% inflationary rate. If that continues next year, a 3% inflationary rate totals $900 million in increased spending that we will be obligated to by this particular bill. I don't know about you, but I'm going to have a hard time explaining that to my voters back home, that I don't know what that spending is going to go to right now. I'm just recognizing, well, if the costs go up, we'll be there, we'll match it, and if it's $900 million, which is a realistic figure, we'll be there, we'll make sure that that spending rises. Keep in mind, this recognizes the inflationary rate. It does not recognize the consumer price index. That reference focuses on whether or not the consumer can afford a better life, more disposable income, an increase in their salaries. But we're going to make sure as a state government, in our logic today in 2007, that we're going to spend more and we're going to match the inflationary rate no matter what it is. Salaries may not go up, pensions may not go up, but somehow we kind of forget in these discussions about the taxpayer and the ability to spend. I think we're being short-sighted today if we'd make this decision and pass this particular bill. The other element of a perfect storm is whether or not this decision will preempt any budget forecast. Now, we have to wait a month or so before we get to a budget forecast every year. But this is automatically making us consider inflation, that $900 million every biennium as an increase in our spending, no matter what the budget forecast is. If we have a deficit, which is common in the way we've set up our revenue stream, we collect our revenue now, we've omitted property taxes as a place where we rely on a steady increase, a hedge against inflation. We did that during the Ventura administration. Many of us voted for it. If the costs, if the revenue slips, if the economy slips, inflationary pressures can still drive the costs up, and the budget or the revenues that come in off of economic performance in the state could go down. We would have a deficit. We don't have enough money to pay for it, but we automatically today are going to raise taxes no matter what, or not taxes, spending, which will trigger taxes at $900 million per biennium on a 3% assumption of inflationary rate. I'm hoping that reasonable minds in this body recognize that you don't have to follow blindly partisan rhetoric. I'm asking you to join the other members that opposed this bill earlier in the week, and that you join us, that we resist the temptation to automatically make reference to budget increases, that we consider every year, just like our taxpayers, just like our business owners in our home districts, they consider every stimuli every single year as they make their budgets. They can't always increase their salaries automatically by inflationary rates, and neither should the state.
Senator Skoip.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. And as I listened to the debate, the focus appears to be primarily addressed to the spending side of the balance sheet. But we are recognizing inflation on the revenue side of the balance sheet. And this discussion should be about presenting an accurate picture of Minnesota's economic health and our budget to Minnesotans. And in order to accurately present what the state of the state's budget is, we need to reflect inflation on both the revenue side and the expense side. Minnesotans get this. I would hope that you would join the rest of Minnesota and accurately reflect our budget by having inflation on both the revenue side and the expense side of the balance sheet. Thank you.
Senator Hand, then we're getting close to a vote. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And with all respect, Senator Skoit, this does not accurately reflect Minnesota's budget. And let's, again, just one last point. What is inflation? Inflation is something that government creates. When we have inflation, it's because of what government has done. And I would suggest to you that when we say we're going to assume inflation in our budget, we are causing more inflation. Because everyone who does business with government, which is all of us, is going to then assume, well, the cost of government will go up. So the prices that I have to charge for my goods and services are going to have to reflect that higher cost. These things, instead of examining the function, what are we trying to accomplish? What is the right price to pay for that? If we assume arbitrarily an automatic, or maybe don't call it automatic, but just assume an across-the-board increase of 3% or 4% or whatever it is, we are adding cost, or assuming cost, into processes that may not actually have to be there. But it sends a signal to everybody else that there will be more cost. That is inflationary. And so I think that before we do this, recognize the signal that you're sending the rest of the state, that we are going to assume higher costs. You better do the same. That's what drives inflation. Let's not forget that government is the cause of inflation. We shouldn't just assume it. We should do everything we can to prevent it.
Further discussion? Secretary, well, Senator Olson.
Mr. President, I think we've probably done enough, but I have to make a few brief comments. The revenue forecast is based on our tax structure and what its performance has been and is anticipated to be. It would give us an idea of how much more revenue would be coming in. I think it's important to know that. If the revenue is going to be going up 10 or 15%, that is the basis for a discussion of how much should our government be spending, how much should they be taking from our taxpayers, and it is a guide to tax policy. Because when we are required to have a balanced budget, we can't spend what we don't have. And it gives an opportunity for our taxpayers to say, I think you're taking too much, and it's time to slow this down. Or it may show that we are short, and we may need to look at other kinds of resources. It's a different discussion. What I don't know about you, but I am so tired of hearing people involved in government programs say they're having to cut their budgets when they're actually getting more money. Does that ever bother you? And that's what the amendment that went on, telling the governor that he didn't have to pay attention to the forecast, the including inflation in the expense side, he could actually come in with a budget that is less. So in other words, if we may still be giving more, he may still be proposing more money for that program, but if it doesn't quite match inflation because he sees other ways or is proposing other ways to do things or wants to restructure for priorities, he's going to be accused of proposing a cut. And I think that's why, yes, we will have information about what inflation might mean, but it gives us an opportunity for a more open, healthy discussion the way we have it now. And I hope you will consider that, because I think this is the best way to go, and leaving it without requiring that the forecast reflect inflation of expenditures.
Senator Borgen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, one part of the budget that we haven't talked about, there are some automatic inflators that are already happening in the budget. When a program is written in law to meet certain specifications based on family income, etc., in the Health and Human Services Department, for instance, those increases are already built into the projections. In other words, even without including an inflation factor, the budget for this coming biennium that we're preparing now goes up by $1 billion before we even get here. And so I believe that in the way we do structure things and in the laws that are already in place, we do acknowledge those expenditures that we have already committed to in law as a legislature. And those do need to be recognized. But we should not be recognizing hypothetical expenditures, because that's what they are. Until we have approved them as a legislature, they're simply not real. We do recognize already the ones that are in law and we are obligated to unless we change the law.
Further discussion on Senate File 25. Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll. Senate is under call.
President.
Tell me, Senator Murphy's on his way, but let me just say that we had some pretty important votes in this building, and we can't be, it's not going to be stood for too much longer where we wait and we wait and we wait. If you're going to miss a vote, you go back home and explain it to your constituents, but you've got to fasten your seat belts and stick around. And so with that,
Mr. President,
Secretary will...
I move those not voting be excused from voting.
On the...
I vote yes.
Murphy votes aye. Push your button. Senator Murphy, push your button, please. On to Pogemiller. Motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevailed. Secretary will close the roll. There being 43 ayes and 21 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. There's one change that'd be on page 8. Senate File 287 will be sent to the Agriculture and Veterans Committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. Without objection, Senator Parison Stumpf will be excused from today's session all day, and Senator Day, 1220 on. The announcement, Senator Pogemiller. Senator Pappas first.
Thank you, Mr. President. The McAllister vans are out front, so all the higher ed people that are going on the van, please go immediately to the vans. Thanks.
Senator Moi.
Mr. President and members of the Judiciary Policy and Budget Committee, the three cars will be up front at exactly 12:45 to take us to Ramsey County Drug Court. Thank you.
Another announcement. Seeing none, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do now adjourn until Monday, January 29th, 11 a.m.
On the Pogemiller motion to adjourn, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.